from WNYC. Welcome to Snap Judgment. My name is Glenn Washington. Now, Snappers, today we have a very special episode of Snap, one single story. One story, we're calling it Blink Once for Yes. In collaboration with the amazing podcast Love and Radio, today we're going to chronicle the story of a single family, the Facile family. Mom, Dad, Andy, Emily, Patrick. John is the oldest. He's the one with the tape recorder. But really, this story revolves around his little brother, Mike.
This is Mike. I'm not here right now. Leave me a message.
Can we start by doing, can you give me as concise an explanation as you can of what happened to Mike? And I'm talking about the jump at Penn State.
Okay, the fall.
Yeah. Well, you call it a fall, but why do you call it a fall?
Because I don't believe that he was thinking clearly at the time. Michael fell four stories from the balcony of his apartment at State College onto a sidewalk. He had been acting strangely in the days before.
So I just want to make sure I have as much information as you guys can give me. I just want to know what the story is so I can think about if there is a positive way to use it, what that might be.
Yeah, I remember like he was addressing all of us, like all of his friends, as like my brothers. He, it was almost like he was walking around like he should have had a cloak on. Like
he started showing an interest in more paranormal things, I guess, specifically aliens or UFOs.
So it's February in State College. It's very cold. He ended up going for a walk on campus with a friend of his.
We were cutting through an alleyway and you're saying like, right now we're walking through the shadow of death.
He did not wear a winter jacket. He went out in shorts and a t-shirt.
I remember thinking to myself, like, what am I doing? What am I here for? Like, why am I still walking? Like, we should just turn around and go back. We should turn around and go back. This is weird. We continued on.
Climbed a fence and ended up on a practice field.
He stopped and got on a knee, and he's like, I have to pray. He's like, hold my hand and pray.
And somewhere in that process also lost his sneakers.
Then he stands up and starts walking down, like, the hill in the snow. I'm like, dude, you have your slippers still here. And he said, it's supposed to be there.
Mike had a delusional episode and then was Mike. And then he had a delusional episode and he was Mike. So when the boys fished him off the field and got him home, when he woke up in the morning, he was a little under the weather, but he seemed like Mike. He went to work Monday.
But towards like later in the night, he started preaching again.
Yeah. Was that the night?
Yeah.
Two boys kept an eye on him. Two boys went into a bedroom to try to figure out who to call. And that was when he went over the edge of the balcony.
Well, he like looked right at me and like turned to the door. And like as he like pulls the door open, I realize like what he's about to do and like take a step towards him. But it was like he didn't even think about it. It was just like one fluid motion, like I'm gonna do this, and he hopped off the balcony.
He went over the edge, he leaped over it like it was a stone wall in a field.
I'm sorry, Mike. I'm sorry. We didn't know what we were doing.
Why did you and Mom decide to start a family?
Well, I loved your mom. And we got married so we could start having children without anybody yelling at us.
We weren't big plan aheaders.
We had a great time with you. Things got better when Michael came along. And then things got better again when Patrick came along. It just seemed like the perfect thing to add a fourth, and then finally your mom convinced me a fifth.
And Emily and Andy.
Emily and Andy.
Mike was the golden child. He was the captain of the high school football team, a good student, not terribly rebellious.
Well, yeah, he just had a really buoyant spirit, and he would always like map out what we were going to do that day. He would help me out with everything.
Before he left for college, Mike was kind of like the brother I always looked up to. Sorry, John.
Appreciated. Noted. Was Mike your favorite? Be honest.
No. I mean, you can't answer a question like that with kids, because everyone at different times is maybe your favorite.
He was a little goofy, but he was also really mature. And to be honest, John, he was a lot like me.
He would just text me, "I love you, Mom." I miss that.
I know when we got the call.
12:58 a.m.
I heard the house phone ring, and then his cell phone in the bedroom rang, you know, and he got it. And then I heard you say, "He's my son." And then you fell to your knees. And I just froze.
Well, it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and Mom woke me up. She was crying.
There was very little light in the bathroom. I remember my skin was gray.
It was just so surreal.
And
I
remember...
Remember I threw up, and my throw up was orange.
Yeah, I did. I threw up in the sink.
I just threw up everything that was in my stomach.
And I think I said, "Do you know what happened?" She said, "Not really yet, just that we have to go."
We were on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and I got a call from Dr. Simon Lampard. And he told me that Mike had arrived, that he was being treated and evaluated. And I asked the question, "Will he be alive when we get there?" And he said yes. He expected that Michael would still be alive when we got there. He broke 2 ribs, one on each side, and he broke his left hip. And he had some swelling around his ankles.
And a chipped neck, too, or
right.
Something.
Chip in his spine. Considering that he fell 50 feet and landed on concrete, it was remarkable how little physical damage was apparent. But it was pretty clear that his brain injury was very severe.
I remember standing in the hallway outside his room, and the doctors started to assemble, and this one doctor wouldn't look me in, like I looked up to smile at him, he wouldn't look me in the eyes. And we go into this tiny room with like, what, 10 doctors?
Nurses, doctors, the whole trauma team.
And
plus some medical students.
I don't know what the specialty was of the head doctor, but he told us that, yeah, he said, you know, the good news is his neck will heal. The bad news is you should probably let him go. And I remember falling to the floor, and then someone asking us if we wanted water. And it was just, we weren't expecting that.
Johnny taking your picture. Look, smile for the camera.
Are you calm down? All right. Can you see me? Blink once for yes.
Oh, you're saying too much.
Oh, okay. What
you're saying too much too fast. If you could blink, if you could see me, Mike.
Blink if you can see me, Mike.
You see your brother? You see your big brother? Hey, big brother! Tell your big brother hi.
You're listening to Snap Judgment, the Blink Once for Yes episode. When we return, we're going to hear more directly from John's brother, Mike. Snap Judgment. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Snap Judgment. Blink once for yes. When last we left the Facile family, brother Mike had just fallen 50 feet from a balcony and now is in the hands of his caregiver, Deb. His oldest brother, John, is recording.
You see your brother? You see your big brother? Hey, big brother! Tell your big brother hi.
Okay.
DAI. Diffuse axonal injury. Essentially what that means is the axons that connect the neurons in the brain were broken and it was diffuse, which meant it wasn't in one particular spot, it was in lots of places.
Kind of like sheared all the way around his brain, the connections. Michael spent most of his time after the injury in our basement in a hospital bed. He couldn't move. His body was very rigid. One of his legs was bent inward and his arms were bent at the elbows towards his chest. His toes were curled. His hands were constantly clenched. He was fed and given water and his medicine through a tube that was connected to his stomach.
The first day he came home, the hospital bed was set up in the back of the kitchen. He was brought in through the front door, up the steps, around the curve.
You carried him up the steps with...
In the chair.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was very harrowing.
Over time, the care that Mike got evolved, and we got a lot of nursing care through a state grant program, and he had 19 hours of care 7 days a week.
Which was good, but interesting, because you have different characters.
Katie Key! Hi! How are you?
Y'all made me feel real welcome when I came. I felt at home here.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling okay.
Yeah, I'm feeling okay.
From the very beginning, I wasn't afraid to ask questions when I didn't know.
Deb kind of took on a role of, second mother to Michael.
I don't know. I kind of fell in love with Michael. So it went from there.
When your mom couldn't be there, I could give Mike that love he needed. And then I would go home and then James would come.
I leave at 6:30.
Then James would go home, I would come.
I catch a 6:30 bus down the corner.
We were good with it.
Take you to the subway.
James was one of the first aides we had.
I get to L 69th Street. I take the, I forgot the bus, the 109.
He quickly grew to be part of our, kind of part of our family system.
To y'all up there, your dad and picked up the corner. I take 4 or 5 buses. I got to leave at 6:30 to get there on time at 11.
A good day was when we came at night. We worked from 9 o'clock at night to 5 o'clock the next afternoon. We came in at night. We got stuff down. We watched Conan O'Brien. Then Mike with me making a bunch of noise. And I'd be 12 o'clock, TV off. Then we wait for your dad to go to bed. Then we turn the TV back on. Then we kept the TV on to 4 o'clock in the morning. Then I'm like, yo, you got to get some sleep. 9 o'clock. You want to watch TV all night, you got to get up. That's the price you pay.
My peace of mind came there taking care of your brother. I would go there at 11, shift him, feed him. You get a 12 o'clock feed, right? If we have to empty his bag, give him water, joke with him. I know you wishes a beer, things like that, to him, put something on TV.
He always had a movie every time I was over. He had a new movie.
If he sees something on TV and he liked it, I get it. I had a hard time finding some of that crazy white stuff y'all watch. Because the bootleggers won't sell that on the subways or whatever.
Can you remember some of the titles?
Zombie Strippers. Night of the Living Dead. Zombie Apocalypse. Man, anything that came out, we got. A couple of times I dozed off and he was watching Cinemax, but I ain't had the heart to turn it. I just closed the door and turned the sound all the way down because he had a grin from ear to ear.
Oh, you mean like the softcore stuff?
Yeah.
Hey, man, what you going to do? Come on. And at the end of the day, on all said and done, he's still a man. Okay, he's a man.
So can you talk about, like, his level of awareness? Like, what did you think?
What do you mean, level of awareness?
Was he conscious? Do you think he had
some,
like, dementia?
You can talk about anything. I can talk to Mike about anything. More so than y'all, because to y'all, he was your sick big brother. Y'all couldn't get that out of your head. I think we got along because I wouldn't make a thing of this, oh, you poor baby, like the nurses do. You know, you poor baby. Man, quit faking and stop that shit, man. I mean, you know, I didn't think of an invalid.
Me and Mike would play this game. It was great because you could do it both in person and over the phone, where he, like, moaned a lot. He would be like,
He had a sound for everything.
And then I would mimic his moan or, like, do it at the same time as him.
These dull sounds, these high-pitched sounds. He made sounds.
And he couldn't help but, like, smile, and it would go, like, louder and longer each time, and he would, like, change it up. He really understood what was happening, and we'd both go on for, like, as long as we could, going,
You could say hi, hard, like, you know, hi.
Until he just started laughing, and that was just something really special we could do together. And it was nice that even over the phone, like, he knew it was me, because I'd go,
We knew when he wanted his mom, because he'd be like, he would say, We knew that was his mom. We knew that.
One of my favorite moments was when I felt like he was trying to say, I love you. Because he made a three-syllable noise while he was looking at me. And I told him I loved him too.
As the years went on, we formed a little language filled with nods and blinks and me kind of guessing until he smiled that I had done the right thing.
He did thumbs up. That was huge because now we could have some type of yes and no conversation with him. And when he could control his blinking, you know, one long blink for no, two quick blinks for yes.
In the beginning, we tried one blink for yes, two blinks for no. That was too much. It was overwhelming for Mike. That's when I made the suggestion that we ask questions like, are you in pain? Blink if you're in pain, Mike. You know, we had to make the questions to the simplest form. That's how we made it. That's how, you know, and he responded to us.
I'm going to tell you when I really first started liking your brother, when he was upstairs and we was getting tight, I said, Mike, I bet you never thought a middle-aged black man would be your best friend, huh? He started laughing. We both did.
Oh, my God. The first time he laughed was very, like, strange. Mom had him on the back deck.
I need you to smile.
And I was doing homework in the living room.
Give me one of your smiles, please.
I wasn't really paying attention to anything. Mom was just cracking up.
Mom is crazy.
And I look back and she's dancing in front of him. She's doing like this weird ritual looking thing. And I see his hand is shaking. And so I went out back and I was like, Mom, what the hell are you doing? And I just saw Michael had this huge smile on his face. And he was laughing to the point where like his entire body was shaking.
I love Michael.
I thought he was having a seizure.
I love Michael. I love you. I love you.
He went through so much pain for him to be able to like laugh and smile at a silly TV show and like understand what they were saying and, you know, listen to you read to him from and get so like excited listening to your voice and laughing.
There were moments of beauty downstairs, you know.
He'd get infections, fevers. These terrible muscle spasms would rack his whole body. And later down the road, he started getting seizures. But he had good days, too.
All right, down the lift.
The one memory that I'll have forever.
Smile for the camera.
Was when we first had the elevator put in.
Here we come.
And we took him down on the elevator. He had a big smile on his face. And then we took the motorized chair down around the corner of the townhouse building. And the grass isn't smooth, so he's bouncing.
Am I good to turn?
Mm-hmm. With the terrain, and we're going downhill, and we're going too fast, and he's just cracking up. The chair's bouncing, and we're lurching from side to side in the different ruts in the grass, and you feel marginally out of control.
That was so funny.
And he just thought that whole thing was hysterical. He had a huge smile, and he thought we were nuts.
I found that when I was with Michael outside, and sometimes, believe it or not, I'd have the electric wheelchair, Michael, and the three pugs, and we'd just go for a walk. People don't see you when you're in Michael's condition. You have a brain injury. They avert their eyes. And I remember this one day, this mother was going into her house with a little boy who must have been about 5. And he turned around, and we were 6 feet away. And he said, "Oh, no." And it was just so honest, you know, because he saw that he was broken.
It just, I don't know. I just didn't want to be around him. It made me sad.
Do you have any questions for me?
What do you expect to do with all this footage?
I don't know. If I wasn't trying to do something with this, I'd be thinking about doing something with this.
What do you want me to talk about?
I don't know.
I don't really know what to say. It's been pretty awful. After a while, I guess I just started wishing that he would die. So I wouldn't have to see him like that anymore. Because he would have seizures, and I would just hope that one of them would finally kill him.
Can you describe a seizure for me?
Oh, God. It starts with his eyes would go to one point in the room. And they would stay there.
You could tell Mike had a seizure. He start acting funny. His eyes get bulgy.
And then sometimes he would start, like, smiling, or part of his face would start to tremor. And then the body would just, like, convulse, and he would start shaking. One of his seizures, it was so violent that he just vomited all over.
I don't know what the research is. A grand mal seizure lasts minutes. Single-digit minutes. Okay. Michael was having grand mal seizures that lasted 2 and 3 hours.
The seizures were starting to come. They was coming a little bit more. They were just coming more, and they were staying longer. And they couldn't really be controlled.
The only way they would stop in less than 2 hours was if they shot him up with so many meds that he was in danger of dying and he needed to be ventilated.
You have to understand, every time he went into the hospital, which by then had been numerous times, all the interventions were very painful for Mike.
They had to do that thing in his leg.
They used this interosteal thing where they drilled a hole into his leg bone.
And that was hurting him.
And then shot an IV in there. So he had that several times.
We did that every 4 to 5 weeks. Called the ambulance, drill the hole in the leg, go to the ER. But the seizures didn't stop. And we'd go in and we'd wreck a day. You know, wreck a day, wreck a night, be a mess. Mike would take 3-4 days to recover. And then we'd catch our breath 4 weeks and we'd go through it again.
After every seizure, he was just tired. You know, he got more and more tired.
And more we was, I was doing more talking, and he wouldn't respond.
He started sleeping a lot.
He would go into periods where he would just watch TV or stare listlessly over the TV or just stare like that, like he wasn't even there.
When Michael came home, I thought that I could do this myself. And I also thought that if I took care of him, he would get better. And I guess on some level, I recognized that wasn't happening. Plus, I was exhausted and I wasn't admitting it. You know, I realized that I couldn't get Michael better. You know, I couldn't do it. Like, there was no amount of love and care that was going to fix him. And it was very depressing. Like, you have to understand that Michael almost went back, for me, to being like a baby, you know? We were feeding him. We were wiping his butt. He was giggling and laughing. We would cuddle.
How did you arrive at the decision that the Michael that we had, it was better that he die?
He was suffering. He was suffering. And I felt that allowing him to die was the last gift I would be able to give him.
We followed all of the necessary steps that you had to take in order to get medical and legal clearance that Michael's situation was truly hopeless, that there was limited quality of life that was deteriorating, and that he was going to die anyway. He's going to die anyway.
And we'd been through so much already. And Michael was really unhappy. We talked to him as best we could during this process to figure out if, to the best of our ability, did he agree with what we were thinking about? And we did. I'm satisfied that we got his agreement for the course that we took.
Can you tell me about the night that he told you that he wanted to do
it? He just told me that night. He just said he wanted to go. I asked what was bugging him. I said, you want to watch TV? No. Do this? No, no. I said, well, you want to talk about something? He said, yeah. I said, what? And I kept guessing. Then I just figured, I said, you tired of this shit, ain't you? He said, yeah. I said, what, you want to get out? He said, nope. And I said, you want to leave? You want to go? You want to die, right? He said, yeah.
You're listening to Snap Judgment. When we return, what does it mean to love someone, and how would you prove it? When Snap Judgment, the Blink Once for Yes episode continues, stay tuned. Welcome back to Snap Judgment from WNYC, the Blink Once for Yes episode. My name is Glenn Washington, and when last we left the Facile family, Brother Mike was having a late night heart-to-heart with his caregiver, James.
He just told me that night. He just said he wanted to go. I said, what, you want to get out? He said, nope. And I said, you want to leave? You want to go? You want to die, right? He said, yeah. And your mom can hear us upstairs. The next day when she came down, she asked me what we talked about. And I told her, I didn't want to say it first because that's something you don't want to be wrong at. You know what I mean? I had tears in my eyes, I think. Should have said that on tape. I'm supposed to be a manly man. Anyway, it was Mike's wish to go. How can I get mad? How can I be sad? I mean, I'm sad, but basically I'm glad because now he's looking down as he's happy.
So we talked a lot about, like, giving Michael a death with dignity. I was wondering, like, what dignity meant to you.
For me, it meant that he was home and that he wasn't hooked up to tubes and he didn't have needles stuck in his arms, and his family was with him, and his dogs were with him. You know, he was surrounded by love, and we were there to tell him we loved him.
Everything we did for the whole 4 years that we went through this together, we did because we loved him. We made the decision to give him an opportunity to fight because we loved him. We brought him home to care for him at home because we loved him. Yeah. And the decision we made at the end was because we loved him.
The only legal option was to cut off food and water. You know, I wish there was a better option. There's not.
It seemed like murder. I didn't think this was legal. I didn't think there was like a safe way to do this that was pain-free for Michael. I didn't understand that this is a thing that people do and there's a way to do it properly.
My mom kind of explained it to me that we would just kind of wean him off of things. And she did this weird, like, comparison to it when we raised our puppies and we had to, like, wean them off of milk and get them to do real food. She was like, we're kind of doing that. We're weaning him off of everything and adding more and more meds to kind of subdue it so that he doesn't feel it. And at first I thought, why are you comparing death to puppies?
Mechanically, what we did was we tapered down off the food. So he had been on 5 cans of food, and then he was on 4, and then 3, and then 2, and then 1. So every few days, they dropped another can from the cycle.
You know, I remember asking you a few times, like, are we making the right decision? Like, how can you ever, one, make this decision to begin with, let alone know that it's the right decision? It's impossible. It's a horrifying spot as a parent to be in. It goes against every instinct to not feed your child.
I was adamant that the only people who were going to make this decision were your mom and I, that we were going to do this together and we would be in agreement and we would make the choice. And while it was important to us to discuss it with you guys ahead of time, it was never going to be up for a vote because I didn't want you to have to walk around for the rest of your life thinking that you were responsible for that decision.
Yeah, I know, but there's something like implicit, and whereas like if I had objected strongly, I don't think it would have been, you know, like would you have gone through with it if I had said like, No.
I think it was obvious that you wouldn't have.
You spent the night with him, his last night, mm-hmm. Sleeping with him. And I came down that morning and I went in and his color was completely different. He was ashen.
But I remember when I first walked in the room, and I think Aunt Susie came out, and then you came out, and you said to me, "It's not too bad. It's okay." You remember saying that?
Yeah.
And I was
sort of removed.
Yeah, and he's gray.
His face was turned towards like you and Mom. She was just telling him, "It's okay. It's your time. You can go now, Mike." And I was just massaging his shoulders as he was dying.
Yeah.
I remember being told that by one of the nurse practitioners that it will probably be a more beautiful, peaceful experience than you're imagining. I wouldn't say it was that way. Having your child gasp like that for breath, and then the pauses, and then just the waiting for the next breath, or is that the last breath? And he did a couple of those.
In the last few gasps, And particularly at the end, he looked scared. And there wasn't anything we could do other than just hold his hand.
And then he left us.
I sobbed, full body racking sobs, and screamed. It was so real and so painful. I have no idea how long that lasted. It seemed like a long time. It might have been a minute or two, which is a really long time to scream that loud.
Yeah, I went outside and had a cigarette.
I thought it was interesting how when everyone was cleaning up all around us, the atmosphere changed a little bit to a little like lightheartedness. Because I remember Deb coming in, and after she initially cried, remember she kept shaving him? She kept shaving his face.
I remember she put coins on his eyes, which I thought was an interesting touch.
And then she shaved him again. And then she went to get some more spots. And we were like, Deb, he's good. Yeah. You know, she just wanted him to look good, you know. And one of the things I found amazing about his body was I really thought or maybe hoped that his body would finally relax.
It didn't. Do you still think about the fall?
The fall seems like a long time ago. I think more about his actual moments of dying than the fall.
We didn't have anything to do with the fall. We still don't know exactly what happened or why. We weren't involved. We had a bigger role in deciding how Michael's life ended. And this is what we had to choose. And this is what we have to live with.
Well, what's different now?
I don't know. I feel more whole. I don't feel his loss with me every second of the day.
We were ready to have a different chapter in our lives because this had been so long and so hard for all of us. But again, you know, we didn't want that to mean having to lose him.
Do you feel guilty about the way we ended his life?
A small part, yeah. I feel guilty that it didn't happen more naturally.
Yeah, I feel guilty.
Nobody should be kept alive like that.
But he was alive.
Yeah, but he wasn't able to function at all.
I wish you'd spent more time with him.
You wish I had spent more time with him?
Yeah.
I spent more time with him than you did.
Yeah, I know, but...
All right.
Are you mad?
Yeah, I'm mad. I'm done.
You're done?
Yeah.
What? Don't be a dick. Pat, are you kidding me? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is it about this that you won't accept?
What do you mean?
You feel like it was the right decision to end his life?
Yeah, of course.
You don't think he would have wanted to live that way?
No.
Did he ever tell you he wouldn't have wanted to live that way?
No. I didn't want him to keep living like that.
Didn't the fact that we had to starve him, does that bother you?
Not really, because I know for people in that state, it's a lot less painful than you would think. Did it bother you that we starved him?
A little bit.
Would you have rather we kept him alive?
No.
I think it was pretty clearly the right thing to do. I just wish we hadn't waited 4 years to do it.
Yo, there's so much about your brother. So much.
Here, well, let's watch this video real quick. And, remember
shower.
This?
Oh, my God.
Johnny taking your picture. Look, smile for the camera.
He did not like that camera.
All right, you calm down. All right. Can you see me? Blink once for yes.
Oh, you're saying too much.
Oh, okay. What
you're saying too much too fast. If you could blink if you could see me, Mike.
Blink if you can see me, Mike.
You see your brother? You see your big brother? Hey, big brother! Tell your big brother hi.
Okay. Do you like living like this, Mike? Blink if you do.
See?
Do you want us to keep you alive like this, Mike?
Too long of a question.
Do you want us to keep you alive?
Yes.
All right, Mike. I just don't want you to suffer.
He is, but he don't want to come.
See?
Yeah. Yeah, he said, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How could I phrase it? How could I give
him? Yeah, I think we did the wrong thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have.
It was easier for us.
Yeah.
It was easier for us if he died.
Yes. It gave everybody the power to go back onto their lives. You know, it's been so long. I mean, you were living your life, but you weren't here for the dailies. But I think it's been so long since your mom and dad had a life. It had been so long. They didn't even know what a life was like anymore.
Do you think that's a justification for doing?
No.
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 I mean, but do you think we murdered him, you know?
Ooh, that's so strong of a word, Johnny.
We killed him?
God, don't say that, because I often think about that, and I'd be like, I played a part in that.
Is that accurate?
Don't say that.
No.
I don't think that he was murdered.
Do you think we killed him, though? Like,
I don't think you
against his
him.
Will.
I think he was beginning to have pain and suffering. And I think he was put out of his pain and suffering.
What bothers me the most is that there's like this ambiguity about what we did.
Was it right or was it wrong?
Yeah, basically.
You never want to know.
Well, what do I do with that?
You gotta fix. You gotta make it work inside you. You know what? I don't know. When Mike died, it took a lot out of me. I had to go home and just go in my apartment and just be by myself, shut my doors, and shut everybody out. I had to figure it out. You know, I had to make something work for myself. You have to make something work for Johnny.
Well, what'd you make work for you? Give me some tips.
You know, I thought about it. Like I said, I spent a lot of time with your brother, okay? I studied your brother. You know, Michael wanted to live, but I just think he didn't have no more fight left. He went at a good time, you know, when he wasn't all, your mom and wasn't crying over him all the time. And She could be happy. She got happy thoughts. Y'all got happy thoughts. Y'all don't, the last thing y'all see is him not riddled with pain.
Sorry, Mike. I'm sorry. We didn't know what we were doing.
It's been about 19 months since Michael died. I miss him a lot. I struggle with replaying our decision in my head. I struggle with life going on. My heart is broken.
How do you deal with it?
I keep getting up and getting out of bed. Every morning, our older pug wakes me up about 3 a.m. He has dementia, poor fella, and he'll just start barking randomly at shapes and shadows in the house. So I end up leashing all the pugs up and taking them outside for a walk off the back deck.
Down, Joe. Down. Good girl.
If I'm quiet enough in my mind and less distracted and hung up about stuff that I want to busy myself with, I feel closer to Michael. Like, I can feel him. Being outside in the quiet with the dogs, that and sometimes at night, it's like the only chance I get to just totally have that quiet time. You know, I just talk to him and tell him I love him. And I thank him for being my son.
This documentary is dedicated to my brother, Mike. Steve and John were his friends.
Later in the night, he started preaching again.
Deb was one of the aides who took care of him.
You know, and he responded to us.
So was James.
I had tears in my eyes, I think.
My parents are John and Kate.
You carried him up the steps with...
In the chair.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was very harrowing.
My siblings are Andy.
We kind of, like, formed a little language.
Emily.
And he couldn't help but, like, smile, and it would go, like, louder and longer each time, and he would, like, change it up.
And Patrick.
And I was just massaging his shoulders as he was dying.
I'm John. I'm the oldest.
Thank you.
thanks so much to the Facile family for letting us into your lives. This story is a collaboration with Snap and Nick Vanderkolk's amazing podcast, Love and Radio. You can subscribe to that wherever you get your podcasts. The story was produced by John Facile, Stephen Jackson, and Lizzie Schiffman Tufano. Additional recording by Patrick Tufano. Recorded music permission given by Daniel Lanois and Rocco DeLuca. Additional original music by Pat Massini Miller and Curtis Heath. To hear the original full-length version of this story, go to loveandradio.org. The Facile family asks us to mention their work for the Brain Injury Association of America. We'll have a link on our website, snapjudgment.org. This episode of Snap was produced by myself, Mark Ristich, Anna Sussman, and Pat Massini Miller. And even though this is not the news, because some things are far, far more important than the news, this is WNYC.